And so I've told my kids, like, if technology is preventing us from a relationship, then it's hurting us. It should be helping us with our relationships, not keeping us from relationships. But I see, like, that struggle even in my own heart. It's easy for me to notice it in other people and not notice it in myself.
Our goal on this podcast is to know Jesus better and with the power of His Spirit, do better. So together, we can be a little better. Welcome back to the A Little Better podcast, where we're continuing on in a series that we've called By Design, where we're looking into how relationships are designed to be fruitful and healthy, designed by God. And last couple of weeks, we've been dealing with conflict, but today we're dealing with a little bit of a different take on relationships, where when things get tough, we have this propensity to kind of avoid. And so that's where we're going today. But before we dig in, I want to just highlight, we do have a podcast survey that if you are able to, in the show notes, you can click on that. We'd love to hear from you if you want to just take some time to give us some feedback. We want to make this as good of a podcast as we can make for you. And alternatively, you can email podcast@northridgerochester.com. That does go to my inbox. So we'd love to hear from you. And lastly, don't be afraid to like and subscribe. That always helps us get a little bit more exposure to other people and get the message of Jesus out to more people. So, guests today, we have Jason DeGraff, who is my next door neighbor in my office.
Yeah.
And actually my wife, Carly. Welcome to the podcast for the first time.
Too.
She is my, not even my neighbor. So as we kick off, as we're talking about like avoiding relationships, rather than kind of jumping into like why we avoid right now, I'd love to know from you guys, what's been a relationship or something that's kind of you initially avoided, but then you found it to be really fruitful? It's like, I'm glad I didn't kind of shrink back in this relationship. What happened there? Why was it fruitful? What did you do?
Yeah, that's easy for me. My best friend started that way in college. His name's Aaron. He's a pastor down in the Binghamton area. But we went to college in Iowa. We played college basketball together. And my first impression of him was like proud and stuck up and kind of, yeah, wanted all the attention. And so I didn't really like him. But, you know, we just were taking classes together, played on the same basketball team together. So eventually, we got to be close. We rode the bench together on our college basketball team, sat in the same seat on the bus where we traveled together. And that was 2000 when we first met each other, and we've stayed close ever since then, been in each other's weddings. He officiated my wedding, and I was glad he moved from Kansas City to Binghamton a couple of years ago, so now he's close by. So
what kind of turned it from, okay, this guy's stuck up, to, okay, now he's my best friend?
I don't remember one thing. I mean, I think it's just a matter of spending time with him and talking more and just hearing his thoughts about the world. And yeah, just even, you know, we were both pastoral majors in college pursuing ministry. So there's a lot in common there. We were never roommates. And I kind of feel like if we were roommates, then maybe we wouldn't have been friends if we lived that close. But whenever I'm going through a really hard time, he's one of the first people I will talk to.
Mm. That's cool.
Mine is probably less avoidance and more being oblivious. I had a friend, I thought she was awesome, but I just didn't realize there was such a kindredness there. And she really kind of hunted me down and pursued me. She likes to say like a boyfriend in high school would. And she just was like, we're gonna be friends, I really like you. And now she is one of my best friends, and that was probably, I don't know, 5 or 6 years ago, maybe a little more.
Was this Anna?
No, Lee.
Oh yeah, yeah,
yeah. She hunted me down, and so I'm really grateful. But it was one of those that I just was like, she just came after me, and it was awesome.
So. Yeah, there's been a couple of times that I remember when we moved to Rochester, and I thought of Anna, and I forgot about Lee. Even Sarah, who our neighbor, like put a letter in our inbox, or in our mailbox. And I think you came, when we moved to Rochester, you're like, I want to model that.
because relationships, when you move somewhere, it's really hard to develop good relationships.
Yeah.
And I know you've taken that to like, I don't want to be the one sitting on the sideline.
Yeah.
Sorry, Jason. different sideline.
Yeah. Yep.
But to be the one that's active in pursuing those relationships. Jason, we're going to reference your message a little bit, but you're kind of challenging us in this dichotomy between like avoiding and if we just had a correct perspective of relationships, or at least a correct relationship with Jesus, and that impacts a relationship. How do you guys think we should approach relationships? How should we view human relationships?
I mean, for years, my role at Northbridge has been to oversee community groups. That has been like the central way at Northbridge we try to connect relationally with each other. So it's been a passion of mine, part because it's been my job, and part because just doing it has created within me a desire to see people connect. And I think just scripture is filled from the very beginning with God creating us for relationships. Not even to the point, I mean, one of the points I made in my message is the point of our life is to point people to Christ. And so a central reason why we connect with other people is because we want them to love Jesus. But it's much deeper than that. Like God, because he's a relational being, we were created to be, if we're going to thrive, if we're going to be healthy in life, if we're on our own, we struggle. When we're in relationship with people, we thrive. So, I'm passionate about it because I think that's how God made us.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point of like, okay, we thrive, but why is it so hard?
Why do we avoid, you're saying?
Yeah, well, it's like I think for most of us, we know, yes, we thrive. I'll even go sciencey here, as a species, when we are together.
Mm-hmm.
But why is it so hard? And then we kind of default to that point of avoiding relationships in the first place. If it's that doesn't make sense to me, where it's like, okay, we're supposed to thrive together, but yet we avoid at all costs.
Mm-hmm.
Or not avoid at all.
I mean,
costs.
I share that quote from the psychologist Nick Epley, I think, that talks about that. Like, we thrive, we're better in relationships, and yet we avoid relationships, and it's to our detriment.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I don't know, what do you think?
Yeah, I think I'm just thinking about like you saying, starting in our relationship with Christ and receiving his love, right? It's like we love because he first loved us.
Mm-hmm.
And receiving his love is like the first step. And choosing that love every day and choosing to remember that love. And that is like the springboard to other people, right? Because you're like, oh my goodness, like I am overwhelmed with the love of Christ, with how much he loves me. And that kind of propels you into sharing that and wanting to give that. But I think if you don't start there, it's easy to kind of avoid, or just it's easy to not pursue. Mm-hmm. I think because you're not kind of overflowing, mm-hmm. right? If you don't have that starting mm-hmm. point of, and that springboard mm-hmm. of Christ's love for you. But I also know God created us all different. Like I know people who aren't believers, who don't have that love of Jesus, who have amazing relationships, yeah. who are like great with people, who just are good at like making friends.
Yeah.
You're wired differently. Right. So,
going back to your question about why do we avoid relationships? I mean, I think the list could be long. It could be like the stage of life you're in. Like maybe you've got kids and they're involved in sports or extracurriculars and you're like, I literally have no extra time in my schedule. Or maybe you've been hurt significantly by people mm-hmm. and you don't want to go back there anymore. Like you're going to avoid relationships because you don't want to be hurt again. Or there is something you're doing in your life right now that you know is wrong. And you don't want to be cut. You don't want to be found out. And so you're going to avoid people. Or, like I talked about in my message, we're addicted to our screens. And we live a life in pursuit of pleasure at any means possible. And a lot of that ends up being we are looking at our phones. Or we're watching, you know, diving into every TV show. And the more TV shows you watch, the more TV shows you see you need to watch. And then your life is just consumed with I need to consume media, and or I need to look at social media, and now I am not actually spending time with people. So those are just a few out of probably many reasons why we avoid relationships.
I want to take a little bit of a step back. Carly, you mentioned, okay, we need to understand Jesus' love for us. And you make this point in your message, Jason. And my pushback, and even a pushback to my pushback, is like the Sunday school, it sounds like a Sunday school answer. Whereas like, if you just love Jesus, then you'll love other people. Mm-hmm. And that's true. We can, or as we understand Jesus' love for us, that is what, I'll probably quote David Fitch later in his book Faithful Presence, but that allows us to be a faithful presence to other people. Mm-hmm. But it doesn't always work like that. Just because I love Jesus doesn't mean that I don't, that I want to be around other people, or that I want to even exude that love to other people. And I want to recognize that, because there's probably people that are just like, yeah, I love Jesus, but like, I don't want to be around you right now. I don't want to be in community group right now. I don't want to have to talk to the person next door. I don't want to talk to the like someone at the bus stop or my coworker right now. What do you say to those people?
I don't know if I'd agree. You know, I mean, I am naturally extroverted in that, like, if I'm walking in my neighborhood, I'm gonna like say hi to every neighbor and I'm gonna try to like befriend them and meet their dog and find out their life story. But so, I mean, there's plenty of times when I'm in an unfamiliar setting where I just don't want to talk with people too. But at that same time, and maybe this is just my experience, I find when I am living my life for myself, not pursuing Christ, if I'm, you know, not experiencing his healing in my life, then I am internally focused. But the more and more I recognize like the depth of God's grace for me and love for me, even if there's difficult relationships and I am resistant, you know, in some ways to them, there's part of my heart that's like, this isn't how it should be. And I want to be close to you. I want you to know Christ. That changes. Like, I find myself praying for other people more. Like, if I'm not close to Christ, then I'm just thinking about myself. But then as I'm pursuing Christ, I'm like, oh man, I want them to know Jesus. Or here's my neighbor. Like, I'm going to pray for them every day by name. And then because I'm praying for them, then I'm like, I should probably get together with them. Like, I want to hear their story. So I don't know. I guess I would push back. I do feel like if we are falling in love with Jesus, he does move our hearts to, even if it's hard, want to reach out to other people.
I think I can say that I've experienced what you're talking about, Callum, that like lack of desire to, and like talking about our move from Chicago coming here, I was like grieving and I was really sad. And I just like, I like left all these friends that were like family and I really didn't feel in myself like the energy to try to make another community, because it takes a lot of work.
Yeah.
It takes a lot of time. And like, time is something that just takes time. Like, you can't fast forward. Right. And, but I will say, like, that was a long season for me. I probably felt like that for like a year and a half, 2 years. And I even like moved back to the place I came from. So like, I had one or two friends. And those friends I would want to see because we had time on our side. Like, so I will say there's definitely seasons of that, that if you're in that season, like, it's okay. Like, it's real life. It's not, I don't think it should be forever, which I think is kind of what you're saying, that like, don't stay there. And it does take intention, but there's just like, sometimes there's, you need some time to like heal and you need some time to regroup, you know? And I think God is faithful in those times too, to bring you people.
Yeah.
That's what I've experienced.
I mean, God chasing you down.
Yeah. And that's happened to me here. Like with a close friend I have now here, she like came to me and got in God's, like, she was a gift to me from mm-hmm. God. And so, yeah, I think it's real.
It's interesting. You know, I don't want to downplay that. And I think that there are seasons in our life where we need Sabbath. Sabbath doesn't mean you shouldn't be with people, but we do need time alone with God, time to ourselves, time to calibrate, time to get in a good space, like mentally and spiritually. But I think I brought this up in my message. Like, that is a good and a natural desire. But culturally speaking, we've moved far beyond I just need a little me time to a culture that is isolated and disconnected and alone and screen addicted. And so I feel like as a church, more than pushing people toward getting more alone time, we need to push each other to the thing that we're struggling with the most, is actually connecting with people more.
Let's dig into that a bit more then. I know you, I think, rightly communicated that a lot in the message, which I'd really encourage you, if you're listening, to go back and try and listen to the message. I'm pretty sure it's on YouTube. Go to northridgerochester.com and you can find the message that Jason preached to get a little bit more context in this discussion. But you, I'd love to dig into a little bit more of, you're basically saying, okay, what we are thriving in relationships, or we thrive in relationships, and yet culturally we're kind of moved into a space where we are kind of avoiding relationships, self-soothing, whatever you want to call it. There's a whole host of different reasons. And so you're saying, and trying to encourage us, rather than just giving more and more permission for alone time, mm-hmm. me time, you're saying, let's try and push against, I have this picture of like leaning against like a prevailing wind, mm-hmm. Where it's not to say that you're, by doing that, you're just kind of trying to course correct a mm-hmm. little bit from mm-hmm. What the culture is trying to yep. get us to do.
Yeah, where the current's trying to take you.
Right.
Yeah, naturally.
Talk to me a little bit more about that. What, so you mentioned screens in your message. I'd love to talk about that. How you guys have experienced screens being a cause, whether it's social media, whether it's just your phone in general, disconnecting.
I experience that a lot. So I work remotely, and I actually work a lot. Like, so I have apps on my phone for work, so I'm kind of accessible at any time. And the way I experience it is like, I need to like put my phone down. I've felt it a lot recently, just when work is like picked up or whatever, just like around my kids. Callum, you've done this to me where you're like, Watson's asking you a question. And I'm just like, I totally don't hear it because
you ever had them like grab your phone and they're pulling it down?
I've definitely had like the SWAT, yeah. you know, like Milo like SWAT it. And you do, you like feel that like, oh my gosh, like I hate what I'm doing right now. But I feel this like pressure to like respond to someone who needs me at work, or like, mm-hmm. and my work is in my home and I'm remote. And like, so that tension is hard. And I know, Callum, you've like, for Lent, you like had a spot for your phone. Mm-hmm. And I'm actually curious, like, what that was like for you, like coming off of the back of that. I still see you put your phone in that spot, and we're not in Lent anymore, so I think that's a good thing. But like, what was your experience intentionally putting it down when you came home?
I want to get your perspective as well on this, because I think I've shared in the podcast before that I have, even recently, I have not so much anymore, but I would make my phone in grayscale. Mm-hmm. I dumbed my phone down so I can still access most of my apps for some of the like banking or something like that. Like, I don't have social media on my phone anymore. My homepage is not like filled with apps. It has like, I think it was called Blank Space, which kind of lists my key apps. And just to kind of desensitize myself, knowing that, because you brought that up to me before, and it was a big impetus for me doing that. It was like realizing, even reading books like The Anxious Generation, like, what am I doing to my kids? What are my kids viewing me? Even just like analyzing my own behavior when I get home, I'll sit in my phone, or just aware of when I'm self-numbing. And I was like, something needs to change. Mm-hmm. I'm realizing that more and more, and something needs to change. So to answer your question, what was it like? It didn't bother me that much. Like, I had to just be conscious or intentional with putting my phone there. But I think that, yeah, I think I just, I tried to, in that, okay, conscious, that my phone's going there. I'm going to use this moment to just be more available and present. Try and enjoy the moment, mm-hmm. even though there's times where I probably just would rather check out. I'm just going to choose to try and enjoy the moment because that's going to be better than doing absolutely nothing. Mm-hmm. So, mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think just this message is like doing a number on me. I'm like, I'm preaching about this. I better like live it. So I bought an alarm clock so that I don't bring my phone to bed, plug it in downstairs at night. Even yesterday I got home, I went to change when I got home and I sat down on my bed. And I was like, oh, I need to look at my phone. And I'm like, no, I don't. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So I just set it down. I went downstairs to interact with the kids. It was rainy outside. My daughter was like, I need to run. I'm like, well, we went outside. And I walked outside without my phone. I said, well, what if Laura needs to call me? You know, we went for a walk in the rain, and my girls are loving it. They're like, this is so fun, you know, stomping in the rain. So this has been a tension in our home with screens. It's easy when... the kids are complaining or tired and you're trying to get something done to be like, I'm just going to turn on a show for you. Or mm-hmm. they look at the tablet. And what I notice is like every time I'm like, okay, it's time to turn that off. They're like, no, you know, like just like
yeah.
This anger at getting interrupted. And I've even noticed this with my wife, Laura, and I is like, maybe I'm reading like an article or something mm-hmm. on my phone. And she's like, Jason. And I'm like, oh, I'm like, no, starting to feel annoyed mm-hmm. because I'm consumed with this thing that I'm doing on my phone. Mm-hmm. And so I've told my kids, like, if technology is preventing us from a relationship, then it's hurting us. It should be helping us with our relationships, not keeping us from relationships. But I see like that struggle even in my own heart. It's easy for me to notice it in other people right. and not notice it in myself.
If you were to have a book in hand, would you have the same reaction? Or if you had a newspaper or the article printed out?
Mm-hmm. Well, probably, yeah, I think there is probably, if I'm in the middle of like working, you know, or doing a project and my daughter tries to interrupt me, then I might get annoyed too. But I think screens, a big part of it is like the screens aren't always necessary. Like mm-hmm. they're just amusing myself in the
That's
moment.
A good point.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I'm curious to jump back, not because I want to be affirmed or celebrated or anything like that. I'm curious the difference that you saw. More as a way of highlighting the positives of when you actually kind of try and reduce things. What did you notice in me or in our dynamic, family dynamic, when
yeah.
things like that changed?
I was excited when you decided to do that because I was like, oh. Like
why? This is...
I think having some sort of boundary. For me, I love expectations. I want to know what to expect. So to know that like you're going to come home, put your phone down, I love having that expectation. And I don't have to ask you like whatever. I know. So I love that personally. And then I think for me, it was just like I'm an extrovert, right? You get to not get to. When you go to work, which you do get to do, you see people and I like don't. So when you come home, you know, I'm usually like, unless I like scheduled a coffee date, I'm like ready to like, how you doing? Da, da, da. Mm-hmm. But I just enjoyed your presence. Mm. I think that was, and I think the kids did too.
You mentioned introversion and extroversion. You both are extroverts. Mm-hmm. I would definitely lean more to introvert. Mm-hmm. I'm energized by deep, meaningful conversation, mm-hmm. but shallow kind of a room full of a bunch of people that I'm just having small talk with for an hour, I don't want anything to do with it. Mm-hmm. That dynamic, those kind of personalities, characteristics are a contributing factor to us on our capacity to have relationship. Mm-hmm. How do you encourage, you guys are more, it can seem more accessible to people and be like, cool, nice to be you, nice right. to be extroverted.
Yeah. Right.
But what about the introvert?
Yeah.
That's like, I actually just maybe don't have that capacity. How do you encourage them?
I don't know, Callum, what about the introvert?
I know, I'm like, you tell me, because I'm like, I'm just going to think throughout of my lane. I'm
Jason's
like,
well, the you high just, guy in the neighborhood. Just,
I
mean,
yeah, I oversee community groups, so everyone should be in a community group. And right. I like to, you know, I had one neighbor one time, I was going through the neighborhood, and he kind of like annoyingly said like, you know, like everyone, like, how do you know everyone?
Yeah.
I'm like,
Cause it can all from, yeah. from my perspective, real chat. Mm-hmm. So Carly invited her parents over for dinner. Normally, I am just like, can you just give me a heads up? Or at least can you ask me? Because like, that's not to say I'm going to say no, but I need mm-hmm. some prep. Mm-hmm. So I come home and Carly was like, sorry, I know I couldn't get a hold of you, but I invited my parents last week. And I was like, I just...
You needed that like prep time.
I just wasn't in a headspace for it at all. Mm-hmm. And I think for us introverts, knowing and just being self-aware of when do you kind of need to push through it at times for the sake of other people, kind of tying with your message. But I think for us, we've had a level of communication where it's like, we need that. For our relationship to be healthy, we need to have a healthy dialogue of, I understand you want to have people over or entertain that kind of extroversion muscle, whereas I don't have as capacity as much for that. I still want to be around people. Mm-hmm. But I think knowing where your boundary is and what expectation to have is helpful for an introvert. I also, there's two other things I'd say. One is don't be afraid to keep your circle small. Mm-hmm. And that's like the deep, meaningful, like people that rejuvenate mm-hmm. you. Mm-hmm. Because at least what I found when I have those people, like I call my friend Marty almost every week, mm-hmm. like we talk and that rejuvenates me. Because it actually kind of, it helps me. Mm-hmm. So I think for introverts, it's not always that everyone just needs to be rejuvenated by time alone, even yeah. though that's a classic definition. I think knowing where are the areas and the people that can actually rejuvenate you. And then the, what was my second point? It's knowing your strengths. So, for instance, I don't know if I said earlier, maybe it was just to you, Jason, earlier, but for me as an introvert, like I love deep, meaningful conversations. I don't care for small talk. Mm-hmm. My strength is to have like sit one-on-one with someone and somehow they're telling me mm-hmm. things that I don't know why they're telling me this. Mm-hmm. Like mm-hmm. We don't know each other that well.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm, and I think mm-hmm. for me, that's like, that's just who I am.
Yeah.
So I think being able to know like how you can be that presence of God to someone, it doesn't have to be with everyone in the neighborhood, yeah. but the circle can be small.
Yeah.
Your impact can be great while it might not have as big of a reach.
Yeah. I think there's some truth in that. Like there are core relationships we should focus on. And not everyone has the capacity for like 500 relationships. Some have capacity for like 12, you know. But mm-hmm. We've talked about this even at Northridge. I think there's different levels of relationships. And one of the things in the article I cited in my message and some of the reading I've done over the years is that especially now in our culture, we're really good at the deep and close and really good at like the very wide, like social media type relationships. Sure. But our culture is suffering from those like secondary relationships with your neighbors. And that's part of the reason why we're seeing so much tension in our society is we've almost lost the ability to connect with people, with our neighbors and have them over and hear someone who sees the world differently than you and still have a relationship with them.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What comes to mind, or even when I was listening to your message, what comes to mind is, because your main point is like the point of our life is to point others to Christ. Which I think is true. And I love the framing of this. That David Fitch says, he describes it as faithful presence. It's being a faithful presence to other people. He says, faithful presence is how God works. But he requires a people tending to his presence to make his presence visible for all to see.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that reinforces your point, is that it's our point is for others, but it's not just simply to entertain others. It's not simply just to kind of be an ear to someone else, but there's so much more depth that's happening that we are being a faithful presence representative of God to others, which I think is a really strong point as we kind of start to wrap this up. How do you guys encourage others? what would be some, like, a couple of things that you would encourage our audience to do to be more of a faithful presence, to be able to be more focused on other people?
So as you were talking, I had this thought about a different podcast I listened to about this woman who had a near-death experience, an NDE, as they say. Mm-hmm. And we know someone at Webster campus who had that. Mm-hmm. And it changes a person, right?
Yeah, it's true.
To, like, almost die. Mm-hmm. And basically be like, nope, you're not done yet, and get back to this earth. Mm. And she like completely changed her life after this, but she saw her life as like these sources of energy. So that might sound weird, but like, for instance, like waking up in a home that you love or somewhere that you love, getting time with in the Word with the Lord, eating a good breakfast, okay? Mm. Feeding yourself physically, calling a friend if that gives you energy on the way to work, or like sending someone a message. So these things, like breakfast, 2 points for me, time with Jesus, 10 points. You're like accumulating all this, these good like energy points, not weird energy, right? It's just energy. Mm-hmm. And throughout the day, and kind of building your life and choosing things that fill you, so that when you interact with other people, whether it's literally just like the cashier at the shopping store, the grocery store,
yeah,
you can give to them, right? Mm-hmm. You ask, how is your day going? Like you're taking care of yourself mentally, physically, spiritually, emotionally, so that you can be there for other people. And it's in the small touches, and it's when that friend needs you to be there, you can be.
Yep.
And I really like believe in that, that like feeding yourself, spending time with the Lord, receiving his love so that you can give it, and doing all those things.
Jesus, he modeled that when he went off, mm-hmm, intentionally alone.
Yeah.
To be silent, to pray, to... And that is a direct, to me, I love that even in The Chosen, how they represent that. And mm-hmm, the disciples are like, mm-hmm, freaking out because something happens. And he's like, where's Jesus? And then he's just out by himself. Would mm-hmm you think someone famous, mm-hmm, who had a reputation, that's just out by, you're like, how did they do that? Mm-hmm. But he retreated so that he could be filled up to serve mm-hmm others. It's a really good point.
Can I just say too, for mm-hmm the ladies out there, I don't know what it is about women, maybe just because we're awesome, but we're really good at loving people, helping people. We also can be bad at like saying no to things. And like some of my friends, I like to like practice. I'm going to ask you a question. I'm going to ask you, you're going to say no. We're going to practice, like, right? Because some women just like, we just have a hard time. And I just want to encourage you, that it's like, you need to take care of yourself. Like you need to eat breakfast. Like if you haven't eaten breakfast yet, or maybe you like whatever that thing is that you do, have your shake, I don't know, but like you need to take care of you so that you can take care of other people and mm-hmm still be good mm-hmm for you. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So that's just for my ladies out there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's just a couple thoughts about like how can we do this better. I was talking with my wife Laura about the message, and she just was really challenging, instead of like additional relationships, it's going deeper with the ones that you already have. So you know, maybe it is that like setting down the screen and engaging with the person. And it's easy to talk about your day and your life and all about yourself, but be interested in the other person. And when they, like, this is easy for me to be like, tell me about your day. And then I'm just checked out. I'm actually thinking about other things instead of like, tell me more, like going deeper with that relationship. That being said, I do think it could be easy for us to just live our life for ourselves and not stretch ourselves to invest in other people. Mm-hmm. One of the things I've talked about with community groups before is sometimes we're like, I don't need an additional relationship. Mm-hmm. And that might be true, but our church, we are a family. And it's not just I'm joining a community group because I need this. I'm joining a community group because I need to invest in others. Like we need to be discipling each other. And if every one of us was to say, I'm good on my own, then we would have no one mature able to pour into other people. And so sometimes we got to stretch ourselves with something that we don't feel we need, or maybe we don't even want, because Christ's love compels us to share our lives with others and point them toward Christ.
It's the famous Dale Carnegie quote. It's like, to be interesting, be interested. Mm-hmm. That curiosity of, we want people to be interested in us, but the way you do that is be interested in others.
Okay. I kind of want to share our story from Chicago.
Go for it.
Okay. So this is a fun story of like community. So Callum and I moved into this cute little house and the neighborhood was adorable and great. And the houses were kind of like weirdly close. Mm-hmm. And so we'd see our neighbors, and I had been wanting to like meet our neighbors, and this one, the ones right next to us, I just like could never catch them. And so I was walking Watson one day, I was like on a walk in his little stroller. He was really little. And I see her get out of her car, and she's like getting stuff out of her trunk. And I was definitely like pretty far away. And I was like booking it with the stroller. I was like running to the point
where Watson bumping up and down.
Yeah, he's like bumping up and down. I'm like running. And of course, like I like slow down as soon as like she is in eye range. And I just was like, hi, I'm Carly. I just really wanted to meet you. And oh, I'm Sarah. Nice to meet you too. I was like, okay, good. We met, right? So like a week later, Callum comes in the house and he's like, there's a note, not a letter. There's a note for you in the mailbox. It's like, what? So I open it up and it's from Sarah. Mm-hmm. And she like gave me her number and, you know, hi, it was so nice to meet you. Like, let's get together. So like fast forward a year or whatever, we just had the sweetest relationship with these neighbors and the neighbors behind us, they had never talked, like the ones behind us and the ones next to them, they had like never met before. But like fast forward a year and we're all like having bonfires together in our yard. And it was the sweetest thing. So for me, like knowing your strengths, right? Mm-hmm. Like I know I'm an extrovert. I love people. I love to talk to people. So I was like, I'm gonna go for this, right? And so, and it created this like really beautiful thing. And now Callum every year goes golfing with Andrew, which is Sarah's husband. So use your strengths, like know yourself. And I don't know, God does really, really fun things with.
I know we got to wrap up, but that just reminded me of a story. I'll just try to be brief. when we first moved into the neighborhood, we had a baby like the next month, COVID hit. And so Laura, my wife, she just had a baby. She's trying to recover. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of, you know, physical and emotional challenges with that. And while I was out for a walk with the girls, I met a new neighbor. One day, Laura was out walking with me too. And we met this woman, and she was new to the neighborhood and wanted to chat and got our phone number. And Laura was just like, I don't have capacity to like connect with another person. I just, this is too hard. She's exhausted. And I'm like, but we got to connect. Like these people want to connect. In fact, this friend she texted Laura how hungry she was for like a new relationship. And I was, Laura, like, can you reach out to her? And she didn't want to, or she was hesitant to.
Yeah.
Now that's one of our closest friends. Yeah. And I mean, so sometimes maybe that's one spouse is more outgoing than the other, and they encourage someone to connect and you can develop a relationship that is going to be really meaningful in your life.
It's amazing how in so many of these instances, though it's not for us, we kind of do it for other people. Mm-hmm. It actually helps us to kind of full circle, helps us thrive at the same time. Mm-hmm. I'm going to share a quote to wrap us up, but before we do so, I want to remind you to like and subscribe. I want you to email us if you have any thoughts and questions. Specifically, we have a series coming up where we're going to be talking about the devil. Dun, dun, dun. And so if you have any questions about the enemy, all that sort of stuff, I know it can be quite a confusing thing. Please send us your questions at podcast@northridgerochester.com. We would love to be able to try and answer some of those. So that's your first heads up. Lastly, if you can, fill out the survey in the show notes. But I wanted to end this episode. There's so many different things that are pulling us away from being present with God. And this is Mark Sayers' quote from Non-Anxious Presence. He says, the fundamental principle was to remain present within the unhealthy environment while enduring the sabotage, backlash, and undermining that leaders inevitably face when trying to act as a non-anxious presence in anxious social systems. therefore leaders, now I know this is for leaders specifically, but you can apply this to your own life. Therefore leaders who wish to be a non-anxious presence must keep their nerve and push through the backlash, sabotage, betrayal from friends and colleagues, criticism and emotional pain, and keep growing towards the higher vision in a non-anxious way. So let's be that non-anxious presence, that presence of God to other people. And honestly, let's see how God's going to cause us to thrive together. See you next week.